In April, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed an executive order paving the way for pharmacists to conduct tests for the novel coronavirus. And while the state had hoped this action would widely expand the availability of testing, that hasn't been the case so far. To discuss this issue and much more, we're joined by Stephen Moore, president of the Pharmacists Society of the State of New York.
Of course, Dave. Thank you, and happy to be here.
Steve, can you begin by explaining the immediate ramifications of the executive order that the governor signed that's supposed to make testing widespread available through pharmacists?
Yeah, so first and foremost, we're incredibly excited for the opportunity to work with the state and to work with the patients in our communities to bring COVID-19 testing to as many of our patients and citizens of New York as possible. This COVID-19 testing falls under a category of tests called CLIA-waived tests. And here in New York, this is actually pretty new to us. Our scope of practice doesn't allow for pharmacists to administer CLIA-waived tests at this point in time. And there are some mechanisms for pharmacists to get involved, but long story short, is there are some regulatory barriers and obstacles which previously, prior to this executive order, made it harder for pharmacists to do than most would like. So by issuing the executive order, the governor takes down and removes some of the roadblocks. And in doing so, he also worked to create a pilot program for 52 pharmacies. And the goal would be for these 52 pharmacies to start to administer upwards of 7,000 tests a week here in New York to get COVID-19 testing up and off the ground in our communities. And pharmacists are kind of our most accessible healthcare professionals are in a unique situation where we're already here, our patients already know us, and we're ready to stand with the state and to get patients tested.
So in addition to eliminating the regulatory roadblock, what else is the state doing to get not only the pilot program up and running, but the pharmacies around the state that aren't part of this? Are they, for instance, making testing kits available?
Yep. So first and foremost, and that's kind of the most exciting part of the pilot program for us, is obviously the expanded scope. But the state is actually going to be sending tests to the pharmacies in this pilot program. Being new to this testing world, obviously, one of our biggest concerns as pharmacists is, you know, I want to make sure that I'm sourcing quality tests and that I'm working with reputable labs so that the results that we deliver can be counted on. So by working with the state in a collection site model, which is very similar to what's going on with the bigger chains, they partner with Health and Human Services, where HHS is providing the tests. The state, by providing the tests to the pharmacies in the pilot program, they just remove that one barrier and that roadblock, and they hopefully get us testing a lot quicker than we would on our own if every pharmacy had to source and vet every different type of test that was potentially out there.
What's the status of the pilot program currently, and who is this designed to serve potentially?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, it's designed to serve patients and, you know, citizens in New York. You know, you've seen the governor, I don't know, I should say you see, I shouldn't say that, but on his, you know, daily press conferences now, the governor is telling everybody, if you don't feel well and you want to get tested, to get a test. So I think that goes back to the accessibility of our community pharmacists here in New York. We're generally very readily available. I mean, some of us are operating under a closed door model right now, so it's not like you can walk right in. But, you know, you can still, you know, get in touch with your pharmacist and get in touch with your pharmacy. And so in the case of the testing, it's just one more outlet and one more place where, you know, the infrastructure exists to get these tests to people.
And have the pilot programs begun?
At this point, the pilot program, I mean, I guess, has started in the sense that we're working with the state and we're communicating with the governor on pretty much a daily basis at this point. We're in contact with the office throughout the course of the holiday weekend, and we're just kind of prepping our pharmacies and ready and waiting for the first round of tests to arrive.
You talked about the role that pharmacies play in communities and why they would make for a good testing site. What criteria would you need to meet in order to get a COVID-19 test at a pharmacy?
The end result and the end goal is to get to the point where anybody who wants a test can get a test. Now, does that mean that there won't be some criteria as we roll out this pilot until we make sure that we have enough tests for everybody and, you know, we have everything we need? You know, that's hard to say. At this point, what we're doing, too, is you see most pharmacies that are engaging in testing are working under an appointment-based model.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind that is, you know, obviously when we're still, not that we won't be in the midst of this in a few months, but in the short term, when we're dealing with potential for more infected patients, you don't necessarily want patients who are sick walking from place to place looking to see if there's a test available. And you want them to know that there's going to be a test when and where they show up. So I think you're going to see an initial appointment-based model, and you're probably going to see that continue for people who are experiencing symptoms. And that's for the diagnostic model. Now, once we start to move towards the antibody model, where you start to look at, you know, well, it's less of a question about whether or not the patient has an active case of COVID-19, and it's more of a question as to, well, did they have a case of COVID-19? And that's where you see the antibody test come in, and that's going to be probably more of a walk-in type of thing, you know, because obviously those patients aren't necessarily sick, they're not symptomatic, and it's more, you know, hey, am I okay to go back to work? And if I'm exposed to something, am I, you know, likely to come down with it? Or if I've already had it, then I don't have to worry to the same degree as somebody who may not have been exposed to this yet. So I think with the different tests, you're going to see different models. You know, the big concern, like I said, in the immediate term being, you know, the symptomatic diagnostic model for patients with active infections. But as we move towards taking the state off of pause, and not only here in New York, but throughout the country, reopening everything, you know, we're going to want to be doing the antibody testing to see, do these patients have the antibodies to that this particular infection? And, you know, one, we've got to, you know, another, you know, source of thing, we've got to figure out what exactly that means. You know, does that mean I'm immune to this for a second round, or I'm immune to this for 3 months, or I'm immune to it for 6 months, or am I immune to this for the rest of my life? So, you know, I think that's where the pharmacies are really going to play a big role, is in that second wave. And we're kind of waiting, too, on those tests to be CLIA-waived and to become available, and for the FDA to provide some guidance in that regard.
Well, there's all types of different pharmacies in the state. There's the big chains, there's the independent facilities. Will they have different testing capacity outside of this pilot program? For instance, should I assume that a CVS or a Walgreens is more likely to have testing than some mom-and-pop shop in my community?
You know, not necessarily. I think kind of like you see with immunization here in New York, you know, you have some of the bigger chains where some of their stores have great immunization models, and some of the bigger chains where maybe their stores aren't as set up as they would like, you know, for the physical workflow. And then you have some independents who are the same way. You know, you can build your pharmacy with that type of model in mind, or you can do a remodel. And you see a lot of independents who, you know, who work to, you know, deliver whatever the services the community they reside in needs. And I think that this COVID-19 testing is going to be something that is embraced by the pharmacy community. I have a lot of pharmacists that I've heard from who weren't selected to be part of the pilot who are excited for the opportunity for the profession, but they're also, you know, kind of chomping at the bit to be part of it themselves too. So I think you're going to see this, you know, be something that's adopted pretty widely by, you know, any pharmacy and pharmacist, no matter what their setting is.
Will pharmacies have to adapt in order to provide this test in terms of, like, the physical location that they offer it? Because you see some of these, like, drive-by testing sites where there are people dressed up in gear and they're trying to be as safe as possible because theoretically this person's getting tested since they might have the virus. So what sort of goes into that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's one of the concerns, and one of the things that, you know, we discussed prior to the launch of this pilot is sourcing PPE or personal protective equipment. You know, pharmacies may not have had to purchase the amounts or the types of PPE in the past that we'll need for this type of, you know, model and this testing. So that's another thing that the state is, you know, going to help us with initially, is to provide a source so that you know that, okay, these pharmacists aren't being held back, that we're starting with these 7,000 tests a week, and, you know, we're identifying other vendors and everything that, you know, we're working with our various, you know, trade associations and groups here in New York. And, you know, yeah, you're going to have new materials and new workflow processes for these pharmacists and these pharmacies. But I think, like I said, I think by and large, pharmacists are pretty excited for this opportunity and are going to, you know, rise to the occasion, and you're going to see a lot of tests being done.
Legislation is poised to move through the Capitol this week dealing with the administering of a COVID-19 vaccine if and when one is created. What does that mean for pharmacists?
Yeah, so that's something, you know, unfortunately here in New York, kind of like with the COVID-19 and the CLIA wave testing, when it comes to immunization, our scope of practice is not as, I guess, robust as it is for our colleagues in other states. So New York is one of only four states that does not allow for pharmacists to administer all CDC-approved immunizations. So we can do a certain amount of them, and, you know, we're determined, you know, every few years the model sunsets and we go back to the legislator and we say, hey, you know, we're doing influenza, we're doing pneumococcal, we're doing all sorts of stuff, zoster. You know, we'd like to renew those privileges to make sure our pharmacists can continue to do that. So That's why here in New York, we need the legislative authority to administer what would be a new vaccine. So we're excited that this is being done ahead of time in anticipation of this vaccine. And I think just like you see pharmacies immunize for influenza pretty commonly and pretty frequently, we're probably the biggest source of immunizations for that particular product. You know, I think you'll see pharmacies immunize for COVID-19.
Pharmacies have had to adapt during this public health crisis. What changes, if any, do you believe will stay after we return to some version of normalcy?
I would hope, truth be told, a lot of them. You know, if you start to look at pharmacy and, you know, what we can do for our patients, you know, here in New York, we're not operating at the top of our license. You know, we're not, our scope is more restrictive, like I said, compared to our colleagues in other states. We have pharmacy students who, you know, they graduate and they leave New York because they can't practice the way that they were trained to, you know, here in our New York schools. You know, right now, too, we have 700 pharmacy graduates who are waiting to find out how they're going to get licensed here in New York. So, you know, we tend to, you know, proceed a little bit, I don't want to say cautiously, but even a little bit slower here in New York than some of the other states when it comes to scope or practice issues. And I think if anything, this COVID-19 crisis has demonstrated that we need all of our healthcare professionals and we need all of them practicing at the top of their license to really take care of our patients. If you start to look at what pharmacists can do with this COVID-19 testing, and then you maybe start to extrapolate a little bit and say, okay, well, if they can test for COVID-19, why can't they test for influenza? And if we can test for the regular flu during the flu season, think about how many patients we're going to keep out of doctor's office or hospitals and, you know, how much resources, you know, how many other resources we can free up, you know, by utilizing our pharmacies to their fullest capacity and their fullest extent. And I think it just makes a lot of sense from a, you know, logistical standpoint to really take advantage of the tools that we have.
Are pharmacists prepared to add more responsibilities to their already very busy routine?
So there's going to have to be some changes. You know, first and foremost, I want to say that our pharmacists are trained and our pharmacists are ready, willing, and able. I think the biggest problem we see in pharmacy today is, you know, the pharmacy benefit managers and the PBMs. When you have prescriptions controlled, something like 85% of our prescriptions are controlled and reimbursed by up to three companies. And they reimburse their competitors at a lower amount than they reimburse themselves. And they mandate distribution channels, whether that be mail order or their own brick and mortar stores. And they reduce reimbursements to the point where they send letters offering to buy their competitors saying, hey, we know you're in tough financial straits. How about you sell to us? You know, these pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs, they need to be licensed and they need to be regulated in New York. And that needs to happen ASAP.
What about things like curbside pickup and home delivery of medications? Is that something that's going to be commonplace in the aftermath of this pandemic?
Oh, absolutely. Prior to this pandemic, 76% of your independent pharmacies were already offering delivery. So I think if you start to look at, you know, the independent pharmacy model, you know, that was a service that many were already providing.
Will pharmacies be able to survive this pandemic financially?
You know, unfortunately, we've heard and we've seen pharmacies closing their doors the last few weeks and the last few months, just like everybody else. You know, we talked a little bit about the PBMs and the reimbursement challenges. Believe it or not, pharmacies are actually reimbursed less for 90-day supplies of medications than they are for 30-day supplies. Excuse me. So if somebody gets one 90-day prescription, I may often be reimbursed at a rate less than if somebody were to get three of those 30-day prescriptions. And with pharmacies, you sometimes, unfortunately, see these PBMs. They set a reimbursement rate that is below the pharmacy's cost for these 90-day supplies. So while you have the FDA, and there's even some talk about the legislator authorizing and telling everybody to get 90-day supplies, that's coming at, you know, financial harm to the pharmacies that are filling these 90-day prescriptions.
We've been speaking with Stephen Moore, president of the Pharmacist Society of the State of New York. Stephen, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.